William. I just want to understand, says Annetta, why William is so set on not getting the first memory back and deleting the new one. Isn't it obvious that deleting things doesn't work? William and Annetta are, once again, sitting opposite Marion Dunlop. Marion hears Annetta out. Then, as she is wont to do, she refuses to adjudicate and instead asks them both how they feel. Annetta is feeling frightened, sympathetic, angry, loving, frustrated, sad, hopeful, and conflicted. She's feeling other things too, she says, but those are the main ones. Then she falls silent, arms drawn in, legs tucked, like there's not enough space for her and all the feelings in Marion's small room. There's a silence. And you, William? Marion prompts. William hesitates. He's trying to pick the right words to fit his thoughts into, though they aren't thoughts so much as sensations that slither in and out of reach. Scribbles, lightning flashes, walls, long drops. The long, long shadow sliding into view. Says William. But what can he say? I'm worried about Dad. Marion is looking at him closely. Has he spoken? No, he hasn't. Okay, she says brightly. I want to come back to this, perhaps in some one-on-one sessions. What I'd like to do right now is an exercise. She asks them to think of a favourite memory, a moment when they each felt particularly positive about the relationship and deeply connected to the other person. Annetta looks sceptical. And for a moment William wonders if she might object. But then she tells the story about when they first met. It was through mutual friends. There wasn't really any other way they could have met, both of them too shy to pick up strangers over tangled dog leads in the park, dropped papers, held open lift doors. It was at a birthday party, and the two of them had started talking. Annetta says she can't even remember what they talked about, but she knew, just from that talk, that she was going to marry William. It was the same for William too, though he'd spent most of the night across from Annetta without really registering her presence. Once he was nearly nose to nose with her in the noisy room, he felt smitten. Not just smitten, in fact, but suddenly, potentially embarrassingly, turned on. He thanked God there was a table between them. It was a surprise to him too, though maybe it shouldn't have been, how much Annetta liked sex. She liked it more than anyone he'd ever met. Her initial shyness vanished after two dates, and she'd been startlingly articulate, calling him at 3 a.m. when he finished his shift to talk dirty, telling him over brunch, how he should go down on her. Her hair, straightened back then, braided now, was the only thing off limits. Don't get semen on it, she said, before she'd even taken her clothes off. William struggled to match her. In libido, he was often exhausted. Imagination, confidence, vocabulary, all of it. But he gave it a good go and had fun trying. Annetta is smiling at him, as if she knows what he's thinking. He smiles back, the good feeling sliding between them, surreptitious almost, like a note passed under the desk in class. Outside, next to their cars, the two of them laugh about the transparency of Marion Dunlop's exercise. I mean, it's not as simple as that, obviously, Annetta says. It wouldn't work on everyone, not permanently. You couldn't rely on stuff like that, he agrees. Nevertheless, they stand still, they smile on. She's scrunched her gloves in her hands. He notices she's wearing nail polish. He considers telling her it's a nice colour, then wonders how many times she's worn it before, going unnoticed, and whether his saying it now will sound forced, or, worse, a cynical attempt to build on the goodwill of the session. Annette is looking at a small collection of cigarette butts next to the wall. How many couples do you think have stood here and cried? She muses. Or had another argument. Or proposed. God, I'd just sit at my window all day if I lived in one of these houses, watching the people come and go. Yes, William says. Silence rises. Better go, I suppose, she says. I might see you tomorrow? I'll call, says William. He's trying to think of something to say to keep the conversation going, but he can't. And maybe it's better to part now, on a high note. Their goodbyes are affectionate, but slightly awkward, like they've just started dating. Annette gets into her car. As she turns the corner, she glances back and waves, and William waves too. He feels slightly ashamed of himself. He thinks that he probably should have said in the session, or, failing that, just now, that he should make it clear what he wants to do. Vis-a-vis the deletion. Vis-a-vis the restoration. About how he intends to do whatever it takes to go ahead with the former and avoid the latter. But things were going so well, and he didn't want to ruin it. William is at the bar of the Fox and Hounds, waiting to buy a pint for Carey and himself, allowing himself to be washed gently backwards as other people flood in, deferring the point of purchase. He looks at the time. 8 o'clock. If he can draw out this first drink, delaying Carey's turn at the bar, he might be able to plead a work night and get home after only 2 pints, sober. William tries to avoid getting drunk these days, mainly because alcohol and Valium don't mix. He doesn't want Annetta or the children having the burden of drugs death dad for the rest of their lives. The problem is socializing. He'll drink too much at the start of the night in an attempt to feel more comfortable. Then every time someone says something that makes him uncomfortable, he'll drink again. The last time was at a 40th birthday party he couldn't get out of. William, all the lavender I planted is dying. What do you think I should do? William, you'll know this one. Who is the UK's most prolific serial killer? William, I have a friend you might like. She's a widow, but she's very positive. What? Only separated. But it's been, what, a year? Oh, right. It feels like much longer. Sir, the bartender says. Sir, it's your turn. Is it? Asks William. Yes, says the bartender. The two people to either side of William both nod encouragingly. Everyone in the world, it seems, wants William to buy his drinks. So, William says to Carey, sitting down and putting the pints down on the unsteady table. Got any holidays planned? Carey looks at him curiously. It's probably the same expression he had when William called him and said he felt bad about leaving it so long and would Carey like to go for a pint. Mauritius, Carey says. With Deborah and the kids. Great, says William. There's a pause. Starting off with this sort of casual conversation was a mistake. William's not a casual man. It looks off. And in any case, there's probably no way for William to casually bring the conversation round to the subject of his memory wipe or what he wants Carey to do. He can't think of any way to lead into it, other than saying,
Look, Carrie, I need you to pull some illegal strings and see if you can get some information on a memory wipe I had. Just the when, why, who, and how of it. Be a pal, won't you?
You okay, Hall? Carrie asks.
Why?
You seem different.
Well, you used to be silent and grumpy. Now you're silent and sad.
Not a bad summary, William says. You should tell my therapist.
You have a therapist?
William takes a long, delaying sup of beer. By the time the sup has ended, he's still not sure what to say.
Yes, he says. A relationship one. Annetta wanted us to see her, on account of us being separated.
Shit, Carrie says. I had no idea. I'm sorry to hear it.
Well, says William, these things happen.
They both drink now, long and contemplative. In the dim, beery interior of the pub, no fresh air circulates. Atmospheres descend and stay put.
Look, Carrie, begins William in his head. Look, William, Carrie says.
William's line.
With the air of someone working up to something.
William's air.
Are the relationship troubles, related to this memory wipe you're getting?
Actually, William says gratefully, it's more complicated than that. I found out that I already had a memory wipe. The one where you go in at night. I didn't know anything about it when I applied for the second wipe. And now Annetta wants me to get the first one back and...
You're not going to do that, are you?
Says Carrie. He looks alarmed. William is taken aback at first. Then he's relieved. Here it is. Confirmation that William is right. Annetta is wrong.
It's not about right and wrong, says Marion Dunlop promptly. It seems Marion Dunlop is in his head now.
No intention of it, he says to Carrie.
Glad to hear it. You know, confidentially, the people who've had their memories restored haven't been having a good time of it. The early test subjects, we've had quite a few people brought in for a fray, criminal damage, and worse. I mean, no shit, right? You just got a traumatic memory back. What the hell did you expect?
Exactly, William says. Carrie is animated now. His voice rises. Then he checks it.
I don't understand what those fucking judges were thinking. Why they forced Nepenthe to offer the restorations. But then, judges.
He shakes his head.
Right, says William.
You know, Annetta thought maybe this latest thing, my being, well, the photo thing, she thought that might be some kind of after effect from the first wipe, because the photo itself wasn't anything unusual. In that case, all the more reason to get this second wipe, Carrie says. If they did miss a bit or whatever, you can go back and get them to finish the job.
That's what I was thinking, William says. But he's starting to feel oddly less certain than he was before Carrie started agreeing with him.
Yep, says Carrie. The less you know about that memory, the better. I think you're 100% doing the right thing.
Right, says William, trying to think of a way he could maybe still ask Carrie for that favor and realizing, no. No, he can't.
The next day, William knows he needs to call Annetta. He has to tell her he's planning to get another deletion and not a restoration at all. William really doesn't want to tell her that. He's feeling a lot of resistance to this idea, as Marion would put it.
So, Marion's still here? William's invited her over the threshold somehow, and now she's making herself at home, wandering around, looking at things, asking questions.
"Is that the only thing you're feeling?" she asks him.
"No," admits William.
"What else are you feeling?"
"Panic, nausea, dread, the approach of the shadow."
"Let's investigate these feelings," is what Marion would say.
"Okay," thinks William.
Except he doesn't know where to start.
He summons Marion back.
Fair enough. If she's going to keep popping up to offer her tuppence worth, he may as well put her to work.
"Really, William?" says Marion. She sounds different now. Less kind, less patient.
"Because I think you know exactly what your feelings are. Don't you? So stop wasting my fucking time."
William closes his eyes. And here it is. The fear that dare not speak its name. "Dad. Dad." Getting bigger now. "Dad." Fully present, fully realized. "Dad." Because William's dad killed himself when William was 6. Not that anybody ever put it quite like that. The way his mum put it, holding William on her lap, the back of William's hair cold and wet with her tears, was that William's dad had been out walking their cocker spaniel patch along the cliff path and had lost his footing. Patch was found wandering around yapping by a woman who lived nearby. William's dad was found at the bottom of the cliff. It was judged to be an accident, and William and his mum got life insurance, which allowed her to live comfortably in her retirement, and even when William got older and thought, "Bullshit. Dad never walked along those cliffs. He was scared of heights." He never said that to anyone, not even to his mum. And she never said to William, "He didn't leave a note, because he wanted to protect us." Because William overheard his dad one night saying to his mum, "You have to listen. They're spying on me, Maura. They've been recording everything I say. Listen. They want me to know they're doing it. Isn't that sick? I turn on the television and they're reading a transcript of this terrorist, this recorded phone call made by a criminal, but it's all me. All my words, Maura. And they want me to know that if I step out of line, they're going to use my words, my own words, to put me in prison forever. Do you understand what I'm telling you? You'll never hear about me again. They'll say I'm dead. Maura, you have to listen." Because it makes no sense that William contracted PTSD from the sight of a dead girl in a photograph. A deeply sad death, yes, but a small death, a not unusual death. Because William added other elements to this memory. The sweets, the tarmac underneath her, he remembers that. But she wasn't lying on tarmac, was she? Because maybe William has inherited this psychosis or schizophrenia or whatever it is from his dad. In which case, maybe whatever he wiped the first time round wasn't actually the problem. Past William obviously thought it was the problem, and why wouldn't he? He was mad. Mad people don't admit they're mad. They find something to blame for their problems, like a memory, and then wipe it. Past William must have slipped through the various Nepenthe assessment stages because A, he wasn't completely mad yet, and B, because the symptoms of his madness could be mistaken for trauma. And, obviously, the memory wipe couldn't cure his madness.
which is back, hooting and hollering in his dreams, or passing darkly overhead, or sometimes just lying quietly, one arm outstretched, with a handful of sweets thrown across a road.
And if William wipes this latest memory, then what? After a short amount of time, maybe something else becomes a problem. He starts imagining things that aren't there, having panic attacks, nightmares, zoning out. Restorations are ruled out by this point, not that he even wants a restoration. He wants another wipe. Maybe he gets a wipe secretly, the way past William did, because that's the kind of thing mad people do. He goes to the clinic again and again, but the wipes just aren't trimming enough off his madness to keep it back, and it grows strong and brambly and wraps him up. His breath is speeding up. He loses more and more of his life. He loses Annetta. Maybe he loses the kids. The breath is going out, but not coming back properly. He can't pull enough of it in. Maybe he doesn't lose the kids figuratively, but literally, zoning out at the wheel, having an accidental nap and sleep murdering them. After that, he kills himself. Annetta never recovers. Enough. He sits still, waits for air to fill him again. You get the point, he says. To who? To Marion? But she's long gone. There's only one way, William realizes now, to find out if he is in fact going mad. And that is to go back to Nepenthe, let them bring his monstrous memory back to life with a bolt of lightning. To let it loose in his brain again, half spoiled, misshapen and scarred, groaning with pain and fright. To go back to Marion Dunlop or another professional and try to deal with it the hard way. Endless talking. Or not, because talking is expensive. Endless medication. He doesn't fancy it. But maybe, he thinks, maybe it wouldn't be like that. If William's dad hasn't in fact passed any madness down, only a love of Sinatra. If it was the memory wipe itself that's responsible for his problems, as Annetta believes, then getting the memory restored could make the problems vanish. Stranger things have happened. And seeing as Nepenthe have already pretty much admitted they've got no bloody idea what they're doing at the clinic, William considers that his guess is as good as theirs. It's been so long since William felt hopeful that it takes him a while to identify the feeling now it's here. He's suspicious of it at first. A brightening inside his ribcage. A lifting of the top of his head. A need to hum. Fly me to the moon. And yes, it is exactly what it seems to be. Hope. It brings with it William's best dream, his fondest thought. The lights go on. All the horror seeps away. He's sitting up in bed. Wide awake, with the birds rioting outside the window and Annetta snoring gently next to him and the kids tapping on the door, "Wake up, Daddy!" Funny that his own life could seem so unreal. The idea of going back to how it used to be only a couple of years ago. But why not? Fiona perched on the end of the bed with her bowl of cereal. Milo sprawled less carefully across their legs. Watch the cornflakes, Milo. Is that sun coming through the window? Giving everyone a fizzling gold edge, reminding William he ought to book a holiday. Spain, south of France, Florida. Now don't look so worried, Annetta. We've got the money for it since I sued the shenanigans out of Nepenthe. What do you say, kids? 3 cheers for Disney World? And in this frame of mind, he calls Annetta and tells her that he wants to go back to the clinic and get his memory restored. And he even smiles as he's saying it, feels it for a moment, like the sunlight of his vision really is shining on them all. "Oh, William," she says, "I'm so, so relieved. I really think this is right." "And it could be," he thinks. "No more PTSD checklist. No more living in a corner of the bathroom cabinet. No more Marion Dunlop," though he doesn't mind her really. "No more shadow." And when this is over, maybe he'll be able to wave Fiona off to meet her friends in the knowledge that there's only a 0.000 something chance of her being abducted and killed. Maybe he'll be able to go back to work. Maybe he'll be able to watch a fucking Scandi drama. Yes, that would be nice.